Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are going to take the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. We're going to kick things off at the Costas the first week of April. And trying to line some of these Crab Cake Tour events up with maybe an Orioles game afterward. So there's a little bit of that going on in April as you play some afternoon baseball. Make sure you check it at Baltimore Positive. Luke and I are headed to Sarasota, Florida, in advance of all things opening day. We're going to be down there this week. Also going to be doing the NFL owners meetings this weekend in Orlando and getting it back out on the road. Luke, this whole new ownership thing, I keep saying to you, I pinch myself. I get up, I get my Royal Farms coffee in the morning, and I'm like, is this really happening? And what, you know, all my insiders are like, it's happening soon, but you won't have a press pass in Sarasota this week. So I'll be like, well, it's just the 19th year in a row as I do this 25th documentary that I found all my old press passes over the weekend. It's been a real hoot thinking about the future while not admiring, but at least looking at the carnage of the past.
Yeah, well, I mean, springtime's all about thinking about the future, and with this Orioles club that is coming off 101 wins, there's lots of excitement. There are some questions, certainly, and we'll get into those, but it is funny that we're going to Sarasota at a time where everyone else is gearing up to leave Sarasota. I mean, let's face it, a week from now, week from now, everyone's going to be counting down to the last couple of days until opening day. And it's right around the corner. Hitters are ready at this point, for the most part. I think at this point, it's more just build that last little bit of build up for these pitchers as they begin a 6-month marathon. And you're trying to keep guys as healthy as you possibly can, knowing that, you see Kyle Bradish right now. You see John Means right now, knowing that neither one of those guys are going to be there on opening day at the very least. So, it's exciting. It's coming. We're right around the corner. And at this point, I think fans are looking forward to seeing some games en masse in this week because there aren't that many. And that's another issue for new ownership. Certainly, hopefully by next spring, that's a much different story. But I think there's very much a sense of it's getting very close to being go time. It's time to start that 162 game trek. And I think there is reason for great excitement here in Baltimore.
All right, let's do the full treatment on all of this. I mean, I don't know what it means when Stowers hits 3 home runs and has 5. I don't know what all the bats mean. And you talk about, hitting off the Twins and hitting off the Tigers and hitting off the Red Sox and spring games. I mean, they're playing split games this week when we're down there, right? Even at the end, trying to get innings in. I keep thinking with Elias around here, and I almost spit out loud last week, they might trade Morgan Moses. I feel like something's up here to some degree where they'll be making moves at some point. It might not be today, this week, around the corner for opening day, but I feel like they've got an abundance of abundance right now. And to your point, they could play that slow. You go to Norfolk, you go to the farm, we'll find at bats, we'll find it's cold out, it's April, take your time, Jackson Holiday, you're still 12 years old, like all of that. We're not going to start your clock, whatever you want to hear. But the expectations, and this really does go back to me looking at my press passes from 1986 and 88, and touching them and feeling them and scanning them and shooting them for this crazy documentary we're working on with Blue Rock Productions and my buddy Greg Landry. But I think the thing about all of this is sort of the patience for all of it to say, we're a contender, 101 games last year. There's never been a March here in 32 years of me doing radio where we can sit around here and say, they're almost a sure thing to be an above 500 team, right? They're a sure thing to be a contender, not in a world where in 1966 you had to win the American League, or in 1969 for 25 years you had to win the division. And, you just need to be a really good team. And there's no thought they're not going to be a really good team from any of us. And I don't know that we've ever sat around here on St. Patrick's Day and going to spring training late, even though there's an NFL owners meetings and I need some sunshine and I need some Mickey Mouse. This is a different level of wait and see with this team and this abundance of talent. But I know one thing, dude. Trades are going to happen. You talk injuries, trades are going to happen, and Elias is not afraid to deal whomever. Pick. I don't throw names at Austin Hayes and Mount. I throw any of these names out you want, but they got dudes, they got parts. I don't think any of the deals are going to include, there's a shopping list of Rutschman and Hendrick. None of those guys are going anywhere. But the rest of the guys are just, they're commodities at this point on a team that has real potential over the next 3 to 5 years to win a couple of championships. And I think everybody sees that, knows that, everybody in the Major League Baseball. I mean, it's almost like we've never talked about it like this, dude.
Yeah, I mean, it's why, on the heels of the Corbin Burns acquisition, and before we found out about Kyle Bradish, I mean, I said at that point in time, I think this was the most anticipated, exciting spring training since going back to '96 and '97. When they were buying free agents, obviously they did not have the farm system then that they do now, but with Pat Gillick, with the commitment to payroll and free agents that they had at that point in time, I mean, that's probably the only comp that I can think of as far as going back to, there was excitement during the Buck Showalter, Dan Duquette years, but it was always with caveats, right? It was always, okay, what's the ceiling for this? And 2014 was great, but then Nelson Cruz goes out the door, Nick Markakis goes out the door, and you're wondering, all right, how's that going to work out? But with this, I mean,
And what
when the
Eduardo Rodriguez too, when you're in it, when you are a contender, you only have one pitcher who winds up being a 10-year major league pitcher. You have to give that pitcher up to Rhett Miller, right? Things like that happen that you lose the only couple of prospects you have during an era like that.
Sure, yeah, and we've talked about it in recent weeks. I mean, they were in on John Lester that trade deadline, but they didn't want to give up Dylan Bundy or Hunter Harvey. And at the time, that based on how those guys were perceived, that was understandable, at least justifiable, let's say, even if you disagreed with it. But I think we've talked about it. It's wide open. I think we also need to recognize the reality at this point of Mike Elias and the front office. They have a process. I don't think necessarily that new ownership coming in, and even with a willingness to spend more, which you hope will be there, of course, I don't think that's necessarily going to drastically change how Mike Elias proceeds, because I think he has a process that he believes in. And I think there's going to be roster churn, and there are going to be trades made, and there's going to be time periods where you're going to get to a point with certain veteran players, and we've seen this in the past. It's just no one was paying attention at the time. There was a point where they traded, Jonathan Villar. There was a point where they let go of guys that were starting to get more expensive. They traded Trey Mancini 2 years ago. You kind of go through that list. It's just back then they stunk still, so it was a matter of no one really cared. But you're at a point now, and we've talked about this a lot with the outfield. Right now, knowing that Santander is in a contract year, Hayes and Mullins are a year away from free agency. You have Colton Cowser, who I expect to be on this roster based on the fact that he has a little more positional flexibility than the other guys. But what about Heston Kjerstad? What about Kyle Stowers, who has suddenly put himself back on the map, even if not for a major league roster spot, at the very least, to make himself look attractive for a potential trade for the Orioles to go get a bullpen piece, for example. So you have all these individuals, and let's face it, you only have so many spots. I mean, you go down the roster very quickly, that on the positional player side, not talking about the rotation and the bullpen. You have your two catchers in Rutschman and McCann. Everyone knows that, right? No drama there. Infield spots, Gunnar Henderson's getting one, Jordan Westberg's getting one, Mountcastle and O'Hearn at first base slash DH. Mateo has been moving around more, playing more outfield. I think he's made himself more valuable in that way. We
Well, he's
think
a real true utility guy at that point, right?
Sure, exactly. And that's what he's not going to be their starting shortstop anymore. So he's got to move around, right? Backup shortstop, that only gets you so far in terms of value. So he's going to have to play multiple infield spots and move around. He's going to pinch run, of course. So he's diversified what he can do for you a little bit. But then you get into, okay, what about Jackson Holliday? He's had a nice spring. There's no question about it. We know, even if it's not opening day, we know it's going to be very soon, right? And either way, what does that mean for someone else who potentially is there? I think a guy that's interesting that hasn't been talked about a whole lot, where are they with Ramon Arias at this point? Plays multiple infield spots, has, for the most part, handled the bat well. I mean, he was a gold glover at third base a couple years ago. He's been a valuable player for them, not lucratively, but he's been a valuable player for them. But what about Kobe Mayo, who himself has had a really strong spring? I don't think Kobe Mayo is making the opening day roster, but at this point, you have to start looking at him in terms of when he's going to be arriving in Baltimore. And, a guy that has played, his defense at third base has garnered compliments from Brandon Hyde. He's got big time power. I mean, this guy's been a serious prospect for them, and he looks like he's very much on the way. And probably if the Orioles were a different roster, had a different roster makeup, he might be a guy that'd be on the roster opening day. But you just look at how many guys they have and how many spots they have that,
For a
you kind of.
lower quarter team, he's a guy you want coming north and you want to give at bats to if he's done what he's done, right?
Sure. I mean, putting aside, service time and all those different things. Yeah, absolutely. So my question there is, I think there's been an assumption because it's the way it's been in recent years of Jorge Mateo and Ramon Arias both being on the roster, but are one of these young guys, is a Kobe Mayo and his potential arrival, Jackson Holliday, if he's on the opening day roster, of course, that's, I'm kind of making that assumption right now, even though it's not definite. But what does that mean for someone like Arias, who has been valuable, but now, you have more and more of a log jam, right? And I didn't even mention someone like Connor Norby, who has been at AAA for, and kind of done everything he can do at AAA at this point. So to your point, there are going to be some moves made at some point. I don't necessarily think it's happening by opening day, but you kind of look at it and you just say, well, there are only so many chairs. And while you can certainly send guys back to AAA, and I think I made the, I even drew the comparison a few weeks back when we were talking about this, where I made mention that Mike Boddicker, who had a heck of a major league career, last Oriole to win 20 games, right? He spent the better part of what, 4 or 5 seasons at AAA Rochester just because there wasn't a spot for him. Now, that's the extreme example here, but you look at where they are on the outfield, and I'd even say the infield at this point. It's becoming that way more and more with the way that Holliday and even Kobe Mayo are forcing the issue this spring that, they might be moving on from a couple guys that you've grown accustomed to. Like, I haven't even mentioned his name, but take Ryan McKenna, for example. Look, no one's suggesting Ryan McKenna is more than what he is, which has been a fourth or fifth outfielder. Good glove guy, good defensively, can play center field, which is relevant when you're talking about depth on your 26-man roster, has some speed, but limited with the bat. I mean, he's a guy that's made contributions for them the last couple years, but he's out of options. And I just look at it and say, is there really a place for him? Are you really going to send all these young outfielders down to AAA to keep him? I'm guessing no. I'm guessing Kowser is going to make it. And I'm guessing, if I had to predict right now, barring injuries or anything like that, McKenna's probably going to be DFA'd and they might lose him. But it just speaks to guys that you've kind of grown accustomed to seeing. We're going to start seeing this thing start to turn over. And I think in some cases, not even because of money or because of contracts or someone hitting free agency. I think in some cases it's just going to be they've got someone better on the way. So I think that's what's really interesting for this team as you see the spring stats, and I always remind someone to use caution there. That's been true for decades, but someone like Mike Elias, Sig Meidel, this front office, they're not going to be fooled by sample size, but they are looking at the data. They are looking at the exit velocity and how these young guys are handling major league pitching that they're facing in these Grapefruit League games. Not so much when they're facing some double A arm, but if they're facing a legit major leaguer, and they're looking at the data. They're seeing what the batted ball data looks like. They're seeing what the pitchers look like in terms of the stuff and the movement and the command, all those different things. Velocity, of course. You look at the raw spring stats. The traditional stats. I don't think that is something that you're drawing too many conclusions from. But when you have these young guys producing and doing things that are aligning with what you've thought of them as far as them being a prospect for you, I mean, that's exciting. And even if it's not leading to maybe decisions that might not they might not be as difficult as fans think they are, it does reinforce that they're talented players. And it does reinforce that you've got a roster crunch here that's here and certainly on the way in terms of these young guys. And that's a good problem to have, but at the same time, you want to maximize all these assets, right? You don't want someone who is really, really, really good stuck at AAA. And that's why Joey Ortiz was part of the Corbin Burns trade, for example, because there was no spot for Joey Ortiz, who is absolutely, from a defensive standpoint, a plus major league shortstop. So, you know, that's
There's no spot
it's
for Mayo, right?
oh, I wouldn't say that. There's no spot for him right now, meaning opening day, I would assume. But that's why I said at some point we're going to be having a conversation about Ramon Urias and Jorge Mateo and, you know, kind of look at it through that lens. I think if you're asking me to kind of project out what I think the Orioles infield could look like over the next couple years, obviously Gunnar Henderson and Jackson Holliday, Jordan Westberg fitting into that, but he might be more the super utility guy that moves around and plays 4 days a week, let's say 5 days a week. And but Mayo might be, you know, there's a good chance he's their starting third baseman. And I would have said a year ago, maybe he's their starting first baseman. And we're talking about Mountcastle, you know, again, I'm talking a year or two out from now. But you know,
Well, 2 years
Mayo.
ago, we were talking about Trey Mancini, and it feels like, 5 years ago, right? Like, so it happens
Sure.
quick,
Well, and that's why, you know, I've said and I've written about it, we've talked about it a lot. I mean, the outfield, you know, the three guys, the three vets that have been out there, they've been the mainstays. I mean, this will be, I think, the fourth straight opening day, you know, again, barring an injury or something weird over the last, you know, 7 to 10 days here. But this will be the fourth straight opening day that it's been Hayes, Mullins, Santander, right? Left center, right field. I mean, that's changing. You know, that's coming to an end in terms of just viewing it through that lens, because you have Colton Cowser, who, not saying right now is better than those guys or right now is going to start over those guys, but I'll say this much: Austin Hayes and Cedric Mullins, they've got to produce, right? They've got to be consistent. They've got to stay on the field. They've got to stay healthy. You know, because you
The
have
one thing
other
they're going
guys on
to
the
do,
way.
stay cheap.
Sure.
And I don't know if we have to talk that way anymore with Rubens, but it doesn't even matter. We talk about this with the Ravens, and there's a salary cap. When, new ownership's coming in, it doesn't mean that they're just going to throw bad money at mediocre outfielders when they could play cheaper. I mean, like, that's a sport-wide issue that I don't expect to change with ownership. They're not going to become the Yankees or Dodgers overnight. So I still look at it as though, where do you want to spend your resources? And that worries me for all three of those cats in
Well,
whatever order, right?
but we're also talking about guys who are, they're not old yet, but they're getting older, and you have, these aren't marginal prospects that I'm talking about. I mean, Colton
Right.
Cowser and Heston Kerr, these are guys that have been top 100 prospects in all of baseball, right? I mean, and in a couple of the cases, much higher than that. So we're not talking about, you know, this isn't a fringe. In the way that, and I don't say this to be disrespectful to him, but Kyle Stowers is more of the, you know, he was at his peak more of a fringe top 100 prospect, right? You know, didn't make the cut, but was on the also receiving votes
How
kind
about
of
this?
list.
Was his ceiling Austin Hayes?
What,
Stowers?
Stowers? I mean, you know, I mean, they're obviously different players. I don't think Stowers was ever perceived to have the ceiling that Austin Hayes. I mean, keep in mind, Austin Hayes was a minor league player of the year some years back. I mean, he
Right.
was a guy who made the majors a little over a year after being drafted. I mean, that's how impressive his ascent was, you know, back in the at the end of the Dan Duquette era. But the point is, really, you know, to piggyback off of what you were just saying, it's not just that they're cheaper. It's the thought that they're cheap. Yes, cheaper, but they're going to be better. Now, that doesn't mean opening day they're going to be better. But my point again is, it's why I want to start to see. That's why I want to see Colton Cowser on this roster. One, get him more acclimated to playing in the major leagues. Two, you do have the reality of where you are with these older guys, but also those three guys don't have to play 155 plus games apiece. You can rotate Cowser into the mix a little more, get those guys off their feet a little more to try to keep them healthier and more productive over the course of 162. You know, deep depth, as Earl Weaver always talked about way back in the day. You know, and not necessarily that's going to become a straight platoon with any of these guys, but you know, Austin Hayes, we know, has worn down in the second half the last couple of years. Cedric Mullins is coming off of a very much an injury plague season. Again, this isn't me being eager to replace those guys, but it's recognizing the reality of you do have these really talented young outfielders who, yeah, you can send back to Norfolk for a while, and I don't think that's going to ruin anything or mess anything up. But at the same time, you get to guys to Triple A, and we kind of, we always make this mistake, and when I say we, I just mean in general, baseball people, fans, media, whatever, that development finishes at Triple A. It doesn't. Guys get to the major leagues and they have to develop. I mean, we saw it last year. I mean, Colton Cowser was an extreme example of someone who really struggled in his first month in the major leagues, to the point where they sent him back. Gunnar Henderson, we were talking about a lot. The first 6 weeks of last season was really struggling, and he ended up being rookie of the year. So what does that tell you in terms of, there's an adjustment period. Adley Rutschman went through this, his rookie year, and struggled for his first month or so before he really took off. So, it's, and I think this is a good challenge, but it's still a challenge nonetheless of how do you balance winning and doing the things that you want to do at the major league level in the win-loss department, the standings, and positioning yourself to back in the postseason again, but also recognizing that you have these young guys who, boy, are making a lot of noise, whether it's at Norfolk or whether it's in the Grapefruit League this spring, that, it's going to be tough to keep these guys in the minors for much longer. So, how it looks on opening day, let's be clear. That doesn't mean that that's going to be what the bulk of the season looks like at all. And to your point, I think we will see a trade or two at some point in time to not clear the deck, but at least try to maximize all your assets, maximize the value that each of these players have. And at some point, it might even be that they trade a veteran player. But I think that's also where Mike Elias has to recognize, and he'd be the first to tell you this, that there is chemistry, there is makeup of your ball club, there are those factors, those intangibles that you can't quantify, but that doesn't mean that they're not there. So I think, it's a balancing act, and it's a good balancing act. It's a fun balancing act, but it's going to be really interesting to see what this roster looks like opening day, but way more so what it's going to look like over the next, say, 4 months getting to the trade deadline. I think that's going to be fascinating. Position player wise, boy, there's plenty of talent, but that's where maybe we transition then to talk about pitching side, where there's certainly things to love, but there are also a few more question marks there. Whether we're talking about health of the rotation or we're talking about the bullpen. And, for me, looking at a bullpen that definitely could use another late inning arm or two. Whether it's going to be someone that emerges or whether it's acquiring a bullpen piece or two. But that's where we go back to that surplus you have on the position player side and seeing is there a move or moves to be made at some point between now and the trade deadline? And I think the answer has to be an emphatic yes, based on how the 40-man roster looks like and how AAA Norfolk looks right now.
Wait, as we go down there this week, and we're going to see some games, see the Phillies for a minute, you're going to see the Pirates for a minute and the Red Sox for a minute. There's so much activity this time of year. And this is where your expertise and you're watching them in good years and bad years. Only had a year and a half of good. It's been, 15 years of bad. Well, not 15, but 12 years of bad that you've seen. They've never been in this position before where they need some pitching and need some help. But when you talk about the kind of pitching they got in the last 2 or 3 years around this time of year, whether it's Cano last year, or whether it's a lefty, or whether it's a righty, or whether it's Batista, I mean, all of these leftovers from other organizations, bullpen's the one place. We talked a lot this week about offensive line and what the Ravens are going to do and where you can get help and where you can find veteran help. It feels to me like bullpen help's always been kind of cheap and very, very speculative and very, very hot and cold and very, very, from this organization standpoint, very much so. There's some guy in the Reds organization that they've always sort of looked at and said, if I could get my hands on that guy, this is the week they go out and look for three or four of those guys around baseball where Elias is like, I always like that guy from the Twins. I watch him pitch up here. They don't like him that much, but I don't like his arm angle. I think we could fix him. That's who these cats are. And that's why I'm not nervous about them. I think these guys are geniuses. I really do.
Well, I mean, and look, I think there's fair concern. Do I think that's panic? Do I think that's going to ruin their season? No, far from it. And I'll point out, as you mentioned this, you mentioned Yennier Cano. I mean, that was a trade deadline move, obviously, when they dealt Jorge Lopez a couple summers ago. But how about Danny Coulomb, who ended up being really their third best reliever last year in terms of obviously had your two all-stars in Felix Bautista and Yennier Cano. Coulomb, they acquired a few days before opening day. Now, he wasn't the same guy that Yennier Cano or, Felix Bautista coming out of nowhere. He was an older guy, been around, had modest success in the major leagues, but he's someone they identified to say, hey, his current club, there's no room for him. We think we can make one or two tweaks here or there. We like how he throws. We like his makeup. We think he's going to be a good clubhouse guy, good leadership guy for the bullpen. They brought him in, and Danny Coulomb had a terrific season. Now, by the way, point talking about how hot and cold and how just mercurial bullpen arms can be. Danny Coulomb this year, who knows? He might be one of their weak links in the bullpen. I mean, you just don't know. And I'm using him as an example. I'm not picking on him, but yeah, they're looking right now for other teams who might, they might have a bullpen arm that's out of options, or someone that's fallen out of the good graces of the organization, and they might say, that's someone we could swoop up, and maybe he's going to start the year in AAA Norfolk for us. But he's a guy that come May 1st, he might be a sixth or seventh inning guy for us. So, you're always looking for that. But I think, where the bullpen stands right now, I mean, obviously, Craig Kimbrel, and I know. Had some very shaky outings early on in spring training. And look, I think you're always looking at velocity. You're looking at stuff. You're looking at how healthy guys are. You don't want to see any red flags. But in terms of the performance, look, Corbin Burnes has been knocked around in a couple outings. Are we really panicked about that? A couple fake games, how he's pitched compared to the last 4 years, his track record in Milwaukee. I'm going to side with his track record more so than what the last 3, 4 weeks of spring games has looked like. But you're looking and you want to see guys look healthy. You want to see, especially this last week of games, you want to see guys looking sharp. You want guys to feel good about themselves. But it's very much a case of, you kind of trust what you're seeing. So in the pen, you have Kimbrel, you have Cano. Even if Cano is not going to be first half of 23 Cano, he's still a very good bullpen arm. You have Danny Coulomb, as I mentioned. You have C.N.L. Perez. I think an interesting name, and I talked about him some last year, Mike Bauman. By all accounts, sounds like he's had a nice spring. The stuff has looked good. The numbers have looked good. He's someone that last year he had his moments. It was up and down. I'm not saying he was great. I'm not saying he's someone you're going to trust in the ninth inning or the eighth inning at this point in time. But he's always had a big arm, and it's kind of now or never for him at this point. So, is he someone that can emerge for them? They've got candidates. Dylan Tate, I haven't even mentioned. He was really good in their bullpen 2 years ago. When they traded Jorge Lopez, he was their eighth inning guy. That year where they were kind of sort of in the wild card race, the final month of the season. And he did a nice job in that role. So looks like he's healthy. The numbers have looked pretty good. We'll see. So, but that said, on paper, I do have some concerns about the bullpen in terms of the depth, the scope of what you have out there, guys that you can count on to be eighth and ninth inning high leverage guys. I think everyone I just named are guys that I feel pretty good about in terms of middle relief, guys at pitching the sixth and seventh inning, yeah. But guys pitching the eighth and ninth, knowing that you can't just hand the ball to Cano and Kimbrel every single night, then there's some question. And that's why originally when they made the Burnes deal, I was so excited about it from the standpoint of sliding, putting Tyler Wells into a bullpen role, but he's going to be in the rotation now, at least to start the year. So, these are questions, but at the same time, every team in baseball needs more pitching. I mean, it's just the truth. Look at the Yankees, who it was looking like, look at their rotation, and then suddenly Gerrit Cole has elbow issues and is going to miss the beginning of the season, and looking like he's in the same boat as Kyle Bradish right now. I mean, it's these guys all break, and I don't say that to be flippant. I say that to just be, it's just the reality of every team has some questions about their pitching. Every team's going to have some concerns there. Every team's going to ask, do I have enough pitching depth? Do the Orioles have enough pitching depth right now? You know, I've got my questions about that. I certainly do. I have some skepticism there. But the good news is they have capital in terms of prospects. You hope with no new ownership coming in here, which, you know, could be finalized by opening day or shortly thereafter, whenever
Don't
it is.
screw it up,
Feels like
Dave. Come on, man.
right.
Come on.
Feels like it's feels like it's right around the corner. But you feel like they have resources in terms of prospects and hopefully the ability to increase the payroll some over the course of the season if an opportunity presents itself to go out there and fortify your rotation or fortify your bullpen or do both. So, you know, through that lens, I mean, there are elements of their pitching staff I really like, and there are elements where I say, oh, you know, is, you know, Craig Kimbrel, do I feel as good about him as I did about Felix Bautista last May? No, I don't. You know, because Felix Bautista was extraordinary, and Craig Kimbrel's not the guy he was a decade ago. But that's not to say that they can't make it work, and that's not to say that they're not going to win a ton of games, even as they look to augment and fortify and upgrade the bullpen or the rotation for that matter. So, you know, this team's got has a heck of a lot working for it. It's not perfect. Doesn't mean that they can't make some improvements. Doesn't mean that there aren't going to be some questions and tweaks, and they're going to have some injuries. They've already experienced that. You know, they're going to experience that. That's part of the game. But the good news is, again, from a recess standpoint or from a resource standpoint, they should have the means to address some of those concerns. So, you know, it's exciting. It, as I've said over and over, and we'll continue to say it, it's a heck of a time to be an Orioles fan right now when you look at where they stand. And also the means that they have to improve and get better, both internally or to go out and make some moves between now and the trade deadline, and even thinking well beyond that.
Well, we'll try to put Luke to work down in Florida this week. We're headed down to Sarasota. We're headed to Orlando, parts of Tampa, and others to see old friends, catch up, talk some baseball, think some baseball, watch some football, owners' meetings, and sort of catch up behind the scenes with MIC. See you soon. Opening day is very, very near, and I'm re-releasing. The Peter principles are all out at Baltimore Positive. You may hear Peter Angelos's voice, perhaps for the final time, on the radio here the next week or two, as we get up on opening day. Whether it's Peter principles or my dinner with Peter at the barn or the old days, we're about to turn a page here into something really beautiful, I hope. I've been talking a lot about that with friends, going down to Sarasota to check all that out. We're getting the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on the road. We're going to be doing live radio from downtown for the first time in a long, long time. Actually, not true. We did it last month for a whole day. We're going to be doing a couple hours on Fridays when the Orioles are home at Fadley's, live Fadley's Fridays from 2 to 5. Luke will be joining us for crab cake, shrimp salad, macaroni and cheese if he knows what's good for him in the new Lexington market. So make sure you're keeping that on your scorecard. Our friends of the Maryland Lottery, Jiffy Lube, Window Nation, and Liberty Pure Solutions putting us out on the road to make it all happen. So come on out, support us. We're going to be at Costas. We're going to be at Coco's in April. And we have some other new spots we're going to check out into the spring as well on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. A 25-year documentary is coming out. I can release the name now. No one listens, everyone hears. That'll be coming out in a couple of weeks. It's not an April Fool's joke, but it might come out on April Fool's Day. In the meantime, Luke and I are talking some football. We're talking some baseball. Make sure you're checking us out at AM 1570, setting a place on your dial, subscribing to us on YouTube as we make our way to Florida and back for a whole new ball game this year with the Baltimore Orioles. Stay with us. It's Baltimore Positive.